First of all, she agreed with some of the political arguments that the SLA members were making to her about the rich and the poor in the country and how she came from the very rich class, which was exploiting poor people. And the SLA said they were representing poor people, and she agreed with those arguments. Secondly, the SLA used a certain amount of psychological pressure by keeping her in a confined space and not being warm at all to her, in fact, being quite hostile at first. Our information is that Sin Q berated her constantly and kept her under a sort of a verbal harassment for about a week. And when he started realizing that she was susceptible to the political arguments the group was making, he and the rest of the members of the group warmed up to her, hugged her, and gave her some emotional support, which definitely also was a contributing factor. So it was sort of an emotional conversion, a political conversion. And then, it's hard to determine how important this was, but Patty definitely was responding negatively to her parents and the way that they refused to meet the SLA demands. For instance, she was very disappointed, according to our sources, when her mother accepted another term as a UC regent in contradiction to an SLA demand. She was also very disappointed that her parents seemed to be debating her worth in the People in Need food program. They seemed to put a price tag on her head, and I think she was very disappointed about that. She also saw the FBI surround a house in Oakland and burst in with guns drawn, and she thought, you know, my God, they could kill me if they come in here, you know. And so all these things played a role. It was a very complex conversion.
Now, Howard, you say that in June of 1974, Patty was given the opportunity to return home to her family, but chose instead to stay with her SLA friends, right?
Yeah, when Scott originally met Patty Hearst, he wasn't sure whether her conversion to the SLA was a genuine one. And at the first opportunity, which came when he and Patty were driving to Pennsylvania, they were leaving Berkeley, and they were outside Berkeley, only 20 or 30 miles from Hillsboro, where Patty grew up. Scott stopped the car and asked Patty, "Where do you want to go? I'll take you anywhere in the country. You don't have to go to Pennsylvania with Bill and Emily Harris. You can go home to your parents or to Stephen Weed." And she became scared. She didn't know what Scott meant. He repeated his question, and she said, "I want to go where my friends are going. I want to go to Pennsylvania and be with Bill and Emily Harris."
How do you think he felt? I mean, do you think he was a little surprised by her reaction?
He felt that he had done the right thing in giving her that opportunity. He was upset that she was angry with him. And their trip across country was one that was filled with a lot of tension, both because of that incident and because of her paranoia at the time. She was, to her, the whole passing world was filled with an army of undercover agents, which wasn't that far from the truth, of course, because at the time, there was a tremendous FBI and police dragnet for the three SLA fugitives. And she was easily the most famous fugitive in the country.
Okay, now that Patty has just been arrested, and there's a lot of stories going around. One of them is that Patty at one time used an Afro wig and a black face to disguise herself as a black woman. Is this true, to the best of your knowledge? And if it is, how do you think this affected the original agenda, the original intent and purpose of what the SLA was trying to accomplish, and as a whole, too, how do you think it affected the counterculture?
Obviously, when the police were looking for a largely white group, and once they'd identified most of the members of the SLA, they knew they were white, all except Sin Q, Patty Hearst and the others dressed as black people threw them off the trail. I think it's reprehensible that the SLA dressed up as black people to carry off their actions. First of all, it brought increased police action down on the people who are already suffering from it the most. It's absolutely indefensible for people who consider themselves revolutionaries to go out and dress up as black people and to make that happen. And I think it's one of the judgments that, in my mind, has made me go against the SLA and consider them terrorists, that they didn't think through their questions. They didn't think through these questions of were they doing the right thing or the wrong thing, tactically and politically. And 27,000 people here in the Bay Area, just in the Bay Area, have been questioned by the FBI and harassed in this case, thanks to the SLA.
So if I hear you right, what you're saying is you think it's done some great harm to the movement, right?
From the minute the SLA broke on the scene, the last thing I ever wanted to do was write a story about the SLA. I think that it's a real blow to the movement because the government and the enemies of progressive people have been able to label radicals as murderers and bombers and kidnappers, when in fact, radicals and progressive people are doing a lot of important work in every city of the country. And all this is being, you know, tainted by the SLA. And most people don't agree with what the SLA did. Around the world, it's in the context that we live in the most violent country in the world, a very violent time in history. In the name of our taxpayers' money, the most violent acts against people are being committed around the world. And in that context, the frustrations that build up in people are very understandable, and they wanted to strike back, and the SLA people struck back. But when you don't have the support of the people in whose name you're acting, you're not a revolutionary, you're a terrorist.